Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, July 3rd, 2019, Logical Friday, as it was referred to earlier this morning. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Kelly. Yeah, Logically Friday. I like that. Sure. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
And the source of the phrase Logical Friday is also with me today, friendly neighborhood robot, John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
I'm glad you're here. First, I wanted to start with you, John, talking a little bit about Catalina and what it could mean for the storage on your computer. It sounds a little weird to call them hard drives now, since most of them aren't really drives anymore.
Yeah, it all started when I read some stuff from Mike Bombick at Bombick Software, the maker of the famous carbon copy cloner, a glorious app, and he's also one of our WWDC sponsors. And I've had Mike on the background mode before, and after I saw his post about how Catalina changes and impact carbon copy cloner, I got all interested and intrigued because it's one of my favorite go-to apps. So I invited him on the show again, and we talked about the changes that are coming in Catalina. Now, these changes are structural and don't really result in much visible change to the user, but they're intriguing because there's all sorts of magic going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote a summary article about what was going on, and then I collected everything I knew, which is not much, about everything that Mike has written and I have written and other people have written about the changes to the system files in macOS Catalina. And that was yesterday, a reference article. And Mike's article is number 4 on the list, working with APS volume groups. And basically what's happening is Apple's splitting out the operating system in its own what's called a volume group. This is a new concept in APFS. It probably was always there, but Apple's invoking it as a feature of APFS. So within your Prime container on your SSD, you've got several volumes. You've got the recovery volume, virtual memory volume, preboot volume. And you also got now something called a volume group. And a volume group acts as one volume, and you see it in the Finder as you used to. But it consists of two different volumes, the system, which is read-only, and a data volume. And they're connected, or they're quantum tunneled, so to speak, through something called a firm link. Mm-hmm. And in this data volume, the system has access to some third-party applications, to Safari, to your /users directory, and some data that has to be modifiable that can't be designed in a read-only operating system. Mm-hmm. And so what it effectively does is it isolates out key components of the operating system into a read-only volume, wraps it together in something called a volume group with all the data that it needs and the /users to create a working group that looks like it used to look in the Finder. And so what this does is it provides additional security because right. The operating system can't be modified by malware maliciously to play tricks.
Yeah.
All right. So I have a question.
Or by me when I'm up to no good. Yes, Dave.
Yeah. So I'm trying to wrap my head around this. So, I mean, this is all when I found out about the fact that Apple was using a read-only system volume in Catalina at WWDC, I was shocked that my first gut reaction was, that's awesome, because that sounds like a terrible thing, at least from a change standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what's going to break because of this? And the reality is probably not much. If people have been following Apple's rules, nothing breaks. You know, we've had system integrity protection, so this is the next logical step kind of down that path where right. The system is protected, but the rest of your drive is all yours to do with as you please. So, you know, those that worried about the iOSification of Apple's, you know, file system on macOS, this is where they're going with that. And I think it's the right path. Not only is it a good path, it's sort of the best one. So, but I started thinking, and like, are we going to see two volumes? And now you're pointing out these things called volume groups. And I'm reminded of rewinding, you know, 30 years or to this morning, when you use a Unix system. No, when you partition it or carve it up so that you have a separate volume. You know, in the old days, we called them partitions because we literally would take a chunk of a specific chunk of space on a rotational drive,
like physically,
and say physically, like this portion of this drive is for that volume, and so we would partition it, and this portion of that drive is for this volume, and we partition it. With SSDs and APFS, that's no longer a thing. You just have this big blob of storage, and you can sort of assign and remove volumes willy-nilly. I mean, you may wind up losing data if you start deleting volumes, but it's not a physical change. It's just a pointer change, if you will, to how the drive's laid out. So as you're explaining this, John, I'm thinking, wow, volume groups, what a magical concept. And then I thought, oh, wait a minute. All of my Unix systems, all my Linux systems have different volumes that are all mapped to the root volume by way of mount points. So if I want to mount a separate, even a separate disk, I just say point it at that folder. And now when I go to, you know, home, I could even map it to my home folder. I mean, it'd probably be a weird thing, but if I go to my home folder, you know, Dave's files, and I have Dave's files mapped as a different disk, it's just right there. And in fact, that's how external volumes get mounted on macOS today. Mm-hmm. Is if you go to the root of your hard drive, to the, there is a folder called volumes with a capital V. There are folders in there that are mapped to your external drives, and even one, frankly, that's mapped to your internal drive because it's all done that way.
Yes.
So is this volume group, saying all of that as sort of context, is this volume group thing a single folder mapping, or is it a little more integrated than that, where you can have multiple folders from one volume and multiple folders from another, and they all are just sort of linked together? It sounds like what you described is the latter. I just want to make sure it's different.
Yeah, I think it is. There's multiple firm links that connect key elements from one.
Firm links. I like this term. Okay.
From one to the other.
Yeah.
One of the things that's interesting about this is I asked Mike during the podcast is, what about the plist groups that have to be modified, that are preferences for the operating system, how it functions?
Sure.
And Mike explained, he said, great question, and explained that there's a hierarchy. There's system, application, and user plists, and the system has its own default plists. Mm-hmm. And if you overwrite one of those by a user preference, then the system defers to the modification you made, but the system itself and the default remains unmodified. It just defers to the modified version you made.
Okay.
So it knows which one to go to. So that keeps the immutability of the system intact.
So it's almost like there's people will cringe when I say this, but it's almost like there's a permanent snapshot in place of your of macOS Catalina, you know, whatever build you're on.
Mm-hmm.
It's always there, and then you can, you know, tell the system, no, use this file instead, use that file instead, but you're mm-hmm. never replacing that sort of permanent snapshot that's there.
Yeah, and the other thing Mike noticed was that when you update the operating system, it creates a copy of your read-only system.
Mm.
Does the modification, marks that as the new operating system, and then deletes the old volume.
Oh, geez.
I don't know if that's the way it works now, but this is interesting.
Well, with snapshots, that makes perfect sense. With snapshots and a read-only system volume, that's like that makes upgrades way safer. Because if something gets munged during the installation, you haven't lost anything.
And so all of us know somebody who was going through a system upgrade that turned on them, and they were screwed. I mean, we've seen it and seen it.
You're always modifying an immutable version of the operating system.
Right.
So this is almost like, I mean, as far as the timeline goes, right? We first got that little, you only really saw it sometimes, recovery volume, where, like, worst case, you could boot to the recovery volume and install a new copy of macOS or whatever, and then it was fine, and you could move on if you had done something terrible to your system. And now it's just going to be you also have a system volume. Aside from the recovery volume, your system volume is just sort of handled that way. It's hanging out in the background. You're not really going to interact with it much because there's only so much you can do because it's read-only. And anything that you do to interact with it is going to happen on a level where you have modification for those files. And that should keep, like particularly, you know, upgrading your OS and things like that. It should be a lot safer, Dave, like you were saying. When I hear stuff like this, it just makes me worry because every time Apple has made a fundamental change like this, something that I do all the time that is benevolent, like it's not malware, it's not me trying to hack something interesting and fun, like it's always boring stuff, but I end up coming up against some limitation and having to go to some sort of length to get around it in order to do what I'm trying to do.
That's why I'm writing this article up, because while it's transparent to you in the Finder, mm-hmm. in your applications, which are split between the system and the data, and the volume group having firm links connecting it, you don't see that. And everything looks the same in the Finder. I wanted everybody to know what's going on behind the scenes.
Right.
Just exactly in case something comes up like what you're talking about, Kelly.
Well, and I, you know, we have these all the time. You know, one of the things we talk about, like having more system access than most things, for example, is Audio Hijack. And, you know, every couple of iterations, there's an app that you use that you have to go through the security dance in system preferences. And there was a point where there was a Kext I had to load because I had this 3G modem.
Oh, Kext are on their way and out, by the way.
Verizon, well, Verizon wouldn't, I don't remember what, but it was like 5 minutes worth of work and Verizon couldn't be bothered. So this modem that I had to do some special thing to the Kext for it and all this. So, like, and it's through no fault of my own, right? Verizon should have signed it or whatever it was they weren't doing that was making it hard for me to use their stuff. But there's always like some legitimate thing that I'm not able to do for some reason that is no fault of my own. Like I said, I'm not doing anything interesting.
First class developers that we know in our in the community and our family who are astute and on top of everything. Mm-hmm. Like Mike Bombic, and then there are developers
like Verizon,
Paul Kafafis, and then there are developers for big corporations who are a little bit behind the power curve and maybe don't do everything.
Right, and even if they want to, like they're not able to get resources and stuff. Like,
so you have to be careful about those apps.
If you're a person writing, you know, driver software, and you work at Verizon, I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at whoever it said that wasn't worth your time to make this work for me.
But John's point, it's a little bit of a tangent, John, but you said kernel extensions are on their way out. That's mostly true. Technically, it is true, but really the concept of them is not on its way out. It's that a kernel extension loaded at the system level is on its way out.
Yeah, however, implementation is adjusted, right?
Apple has made it such that many types, but not all, and I don't even want to say most because I might be wrong about that, but many types,
a non-zero
of
number,
things that used to run as system level kernel extensions from third parties are now able to be run in user space,
right?
And have a similar effect, but it's certain types of them. So like you will definitely need a new driver for whatever piece of hardware it is that has installed a kernel extension for you. Mm-hmm. And it's up to the manufacturer and let's hope they build those. The question is the type of driver that you need one of the types that Apple has blessed as mm-hmm. available in user space in Catalina, which is the answers the question. Is it even possible for a developer to create a new driver or modify a driver to work this way? And I think I remember seeing the list. I don't have it in front of me and I don't want to tap loudly on my keyboard to find it, but it seemed like it covered all of the ones I could think of off the top of my head and then mm-hmm. some. So I think we're mostly okay, but there will be those things like and I'm sure you're not using it anymore, but that Verizon modem.
Good heavens, no. I yanked the SIM out of the modem and I put it in a Wi-Fi, in one of those little MiFi units instead. Made my life easier.
Right, but yeah. Like that kind of thing I don't think was on the list. It could be, you know how Apple does these things. But anyway, this is great, John. This is
one of the things I wanted to mention too is that, and I don't know if this was true in Mojave, but certainly in Catalina, you'll be able to install multiple versions of the operating system in the same container. I think you can do that now.
Yeah.
And it's not widely done. And one of the things I'm going to do over the weekend is I'm going to install a beta of Catalina in the same container where my Mojave exists. And they just have different volume IDs. And so when you do start a volume, it marks which volume ID is going to be started from. And this way, you don't have to have an external drive to install a beta of Catalina on if you don't want to.
Right.
You have it on your internal drive in the same container.
So
yeah, why not? Because it, you can, like, as I said before, you can build volumes willy-nilly. Why not?
You can have multiple bootable volumes in the one container.
And the cool part about this is, and this has been true since APFS came on the scene with High Sierra, but it's also true in Catalina, is you don't, in the old days, and this is why those of us that have been using computers for a while need to sort of flush our brains of these concepts. in the old days, you had to decide ahead of time how much space you wanted to allocate. Like you're talking about here, John. Okay, I'm going to install Catalina. In the old days, it would be how much of my, you know, precious 1 terabyte hard drive do I want to allocate to Catalina? Maybe 200 gigs is enough. Like, you'd have to make that decision before you did anything else.
Now, because you only get to make volume. It once.
Well,
initially, so in the olden days,
old thinking.
Yeah, like, in the olden days, I'm saying
that way.
No, but in
all the volumes in the container share space and dynamically.
The space is just
right
shared.
Now, but back then, you only ever got to make that decision one time, and that's why we used to have to tread so carefully on that sort of thing. That was the biggest
now
deal.
You don't have to even make that.
That
decision.
Led to the practice of putting a test version of the operating system on an external drive,
right?
Which is you can still do, but not necessarily anymore.
Right.
Yeah, you don't have to. Yeah.
Yeah. No, this used to be.
This is great.
Yeah, it used to be a huge thing. Now, the primary takeaway I'm getting from this, like, first of all, the fact that permission is going to be adjusted. So if there are things that you have to install, you know, like a kext, for example, kernel extension, if you have to install something like that, you will still have the ability to do so. If you have some sort of need for something, then your access level to your own files on your own computer doesn't change, which is good, because that's one thing people are worried about all the time, is the access that I have to what I'm using is taken away in some fashion, and that's not changing. So that's good. But the other thing I'm getting from this is that, particularly after the Mojave upgrade, Dave, and talking to you about people coming into GeekGab with weird questions after APFS trouble, is that this, if you haven't done it recently, if you didn't do it for Mojave, this is definitely an operating system when it comes out where you want to make a backup, and I'm going to recommend Carbon Copy Clone or HiMic. You're going to want to make a backup and wipe your drive and start again with Catalina and then copy your data back over, because...
Well, one of the things Mike's going to do is when Carbon Copy Cloner 5.x comes out that supports Catalina, and there won't be, this won't be version 6, and there won't be an extra charge. Mike explained that during the podcast. When he introduces major new features, he introduces a new version and charges for an upgrade, but the Catalina version of Carbon Copy Cloner will not be a major upgrade and will not require a fee. What he's going to do is he's going to recognize that if you try to back up Catalina carbon copy clone of your drive to an HFS volume, he's going to say, I can't do that because HFS doesn't support the volume groups and other features of Catalina. So would you like me to convert, and I'm supposing this based on what he's told me, would you like me to convert your external drive to APFS and be merrily on the way with a clone?
Right.
And you'll probably say yes, and everything should go fine.
Right. But it's this could be one where it's good to wipe instead of upgrade in place. Would be, like, if you're going to be extra careful about it.
How Mike does that, I don't know the details, but he probably will reformat your external drive before the clone starts.
It's magic,
I'm just surmising, Don't hold me to that, but it sounds reasonable.
It's magic. It's just because Mike is a dark wizard and steeped in the arts of hard drives, which is a dark art.
Yes.
And yes. And I am in awe of his dark art ability, because that's some really in-depth stuff to have to work on.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So thank you, Mike, for making our lives better as we all move to... Because there are people who don't upgrade every version of OS. Like, there are people who are only on odd numbers and people who are only on even numbers and just sort of skip it entirely because it's a big hassle or whatever, or don't have the ability. You know, if you are a corporate like if you're in a corporate environment, like maybe you don't get Catalina the day it's out, you know, stuff like that. So it will be interesting to see how the upgrade process goes, because I think there's going to be a new wave of people who are also going from HFS Plus to APFS, which is a different file system, because they didn't do Mojave.
If you didn't do it in the High Sierra install, I wrote a tip on how to upgrade to APFS if you didn't do it during the High Sierra installer. Mm-hmm. And now you want to get to APFS, there's a way to do that. And I got an email from a reader who said, yep, your tip worked. I tried it. And
yay.
I converted my High Sierra drive from HFS Plus to APFS, and it worked great. So
yeah.
Now is the time to make that decision, because HFS is dead. HFS
yes.
Plus is gone. Don't even think about it. Well, except for Time Machine. And I think that's going to change.
It's going to have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to detour us too much, but would you use APFS on a rotational external drive? I don't know that I would.
Well, that's a good point.
Because APFS is very much built with SSDs in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not sure I would use it on an external drive right now. You can. I like John Braun is with Matt Geekgab, my co-host there. And it's like there are some benefits, as we mentioned, you know, with the ability to just sort of assign storage with the blobs and all that stuff. But like, I don't know
We're at an inflection point in price technology. I bought a 512 SSD the other day for $89. And I'm sure you can get
really?
Them for less.
Oh, dang.
A SanDisk, and I'm sure there's probably lower prices than even that. So
yeah,
I'm technically in the phase where I'm replacing my spinning hard disks as Time Machines with SSD.
Yeah. The thing is though, like I can get a 16 terabyte drive for less than $200 or something now, right? So it's still going to be cheaper to get gobs of storage on rotational drives than it is.
Yeah, but maybe cheaper, but maybe not smart.
I don't know.
If I could convert all my Time Machine drives to SSDs, which are more reliable and probably last longer, I would
I do not support those statements that we don't have enough data to support those statements. We don't know long term if
SSDs are more reliable. Because I bought an iMac 27 inch in 2010 with one of the first SSDs, and I paid a hefty premium for that SSD in a 2010 iMac, and that machine is still humming beautifully.
Okay,
I know.
9 years of SSD use, and that was an early technology SSD.
Mm-hmm.
So
But I've had as many of them die as I've had live. The plural of, as Kelly likes to say, the plural of anecdote is not data. We simply don't have enough data to know how long do these last. And when SSDs fail, man, that is it. Like when a hard drive starts to fail, you often, not always, but often get some warnings and the ability to recover data, sometimes all, sometimes mm-hmm. not all.
Yeah, I use an app called Smart Reporter.
Yeah.
And Smart Reporter will detect the health of your hard disk and give you an early warning.
Yeah, but also you
detect the health that your hard disk reports. Do not rely on that.
Yeah.
Smart's one of the stupidest technologies that exists and doesn't tell you everything. If it tells you there is a problem, you definitely have a problem. Otherwise, you have no idea.
Right.
That's the truth of
that's
smart.
True.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing about SSDs I don't like, is that it's a binary system. Either it's working or it's not. And
that's right. And
there's no middle ground like there used to be with a rotational drive where it was like, it's making a funny noise or accessing this file takes a lot longer than anything else.
But the truth is hard disks are on their way out.
I know.
No, they're like, not.
On a small scale, small capacity, I would say yes.
Yes, inside laptops, inside computers, absolutely.
Yes.
But not universally. Like all the big storage is going on hard disks.
And, yes.
Well, I mean, for home use, I'm inclined to switch over to SSDs for everything for home use.
Sure, unless you have a media library that's, 10 terabytes in size, in which case you're going to get a J-Bod or a NAS device. You know what I mean? This is not a universal thing.
I'm not the geek you are, Dave. I don't have a NAS and stacks of RAIDs.
I agreed, but there are lots of
people. My stack isn't all that tall. I mean, you know.
Right. There are lots of people that run Plex at home, most of whom are not running it on SSDs because they just can't afford that kind of storage.
Yes. But also, the thing I'm thinking about, myself with my setup, is to not touch the rotational drives I have in the NAS over there and all of that. It's, I have a little, I think it's like a 750 gigabyte drive, and that's my carbon copy cloner backup. And every once in a while, I plug it into my computer. I do a block level copy, and then that drive lives somewhere else. Maybe I could change that from a USB 3.0 external laptop drive, you know, in a little case from Western Digital, to flash storage, get a little external SSD and do all of that a lot faster and store it somewhere else. I'm thinking of is on that scale, that might be a smart move.
No, that is a smart move. Our operating systems, basically from certainly Mojave forward, but it could be argued that even from High Sierra forward, our operating systems are built with SSDs in mind. They will certainly run from rotational drives, but they are not optimized for that. And because of that, if you're doing a clone, especially one that's going to be a bootable clone, which is what most of our clones are sort of by default, there is a very good argument for eschewing the rotational drive in favor of an SSD for that, because if and when you do need to boot from it, it's really slow to boot system from a rotational drive these days. So having your clone on an SSD, that actually makes a lot of sense right now.
Yeah. So on that scale, I would say, go pick up. That's why I was surprised when John said 512 gig for $80. Cause I'm like, that's a price I could upgrade with. That wouldn't be too bad at all. That might be a good decision, but it sounds like I should wait to do that until Catalina comes out so I can make sure it's formatted properly.
Oh, no, you get formatted properly now.
Oh, that's right, because it's APFS Plus.
As long as you're starting with APFS.
Yeah. As long as I set it up with APFS, it should be fine. So, cool. Well, John, thanks for digging into this with us.
And it's a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's always an interesting topic, particularly as we learn more about how stuff is going to work in the new version of the operating system, like we did with APFS and moving to that file system. And figuring out what it means, you know, down the line for those cloned hard drives, those bootable backups,
It all started when Linus Torvalds ripped HFS Plus as one of the worst operating systems on the planet.
File system.
Sorry.
Well, they showed him, didn't they? it's going to be interesting to see how this works and how it ripples out, you know, to those time machine backups and all that kind of stuff, and figuring out how to manage all those files, because everybody has all this data and we got to figure out, safe ways to store it.
There's an article yesterday I published, a reference all about macOS Catalina system files, and I've got 11 links in there to articles that fill you in on all the stuff we talked about and more.
Awesome. Very nice. And we're going to go ahead and end it here so that everyone can go read that article. Dave, thanks so much for coming by.
My pleasure. Yeah, fun conversation. Thanks for having me.
John, thanks so much for being here, as always.
My pleasure.
And reminder that we are off the rest of the week, so there will be no show Thursday or Friday. I will talk to all of you again on Monday. I hope all of you have an excellent 4th. And in the meantime, be excellent to each other.